Well, my training and my treatment involves doing something called exposure and response prevention therapy, which is a type of treatment where instead of telling people to forget about what happened and to not think about it and to just relax and get it out of their mind, we spend time purposely thinking about what happened and going over and over it again until the person can think about it without it bothering them anymore. So, for example, if I said you don't think of a pink elephant, what would you think of?
Pink elephant.
There you go. So if you tell somebody who's had a traumatic experience not to think of their traumatic experience, you've just guaranteed that they're going to think about it. So if I did the opposite and I said, okay, here's what I want you to do. Only think of a pink elephant, okay? Don't think of anything else other than a pink elephant. And now that you've got that in your head, don't think about what you want for dinner. Don't think about if somebody's stealing your car. Don't think about if your house is burning down. Don't think of any of those things. Just think of a pink elephant. And the more you try to not think of those other things, the more guaranteed you are to think of those things instead of the pink elephant. So by having people purposely think of the things that bother them, we teach them that they can handle the thoughts about what bothers them. And once they know that they can handle the thoughts about what bother them, then they don't bother them anymore. And that's the whole goal of the treatment. Edna Foa, her last name is spelled F-O-A, she is the one who really developed prolonged exposure therapy for PTSD. She ended up winning Time Magazine's Top 100 People of the Decade for the 2000s because of all the work that she's done to help people with this. So it's a fantastic treatment. It works really well. It's got tons of research evidence to support it, and almost nobody does it. Why is that? It's a very simple thing, and it really goes to the people who are treating PTSD, and it is the idea that if somebody's already been through a trauma, you ought to make them as comfortable as they possibly can. And this therapy, which has you purposely think about the trauma and learn how to handle it, is uncomfortable because you're bringing it back up to people and having them think about it again. So that's why it's very difficult, because a lot of therapists don't like to do it. First of all, you have to have a trauma that's happened, and a trauma is an event or events that involve the actual or threatened death, serious injury, or threat to the physical integrity of yourself or someone else. And then you have to respond to that trauma with some kind of fear or helplessness or horror. And you need both those things. Now, lots of people have talked to me and have tried to convince me that something is traumatic. People have tried to say to me, oh, they have PTSD. They went through a really bad divorce. And that, unless somebody tried to shoot you during your divorce, that is not meeting the definition of a trauma. You know, you really have to have this threat somehow to your physical integrity. So in many ways, we overuse the word trauma. We're calling lots of things traumas that don't really meet trauma. But from a PTSD standpoint, you have to really have been threatened or to be harmed or to die or witness that for somebody that you were with or something like that. It's also not, oh, you know, my grandfather died of a stroke. You don't have PTSD from that kind of thing either. You know, you really need to have had this threatening kind of experience, and then that fear, helplessness, horror come along with it. Well, as a diagnosis, it didn't even come out until about 25 years ago. It was really after Vietnam War that we finally decided that there was such a thing as post-traumatic stress disorder, at least in the diagnostic nomenclature. So prior to that, it had been given names, but it wasn't an official diagnosis. It was shell shock and various other kinds of things too, but nobody had been given an actual diagnosis for it. So one thing that can be happening in this war that's different than other wars is the addition of the traumatic brain injury that's also occurring for a lot of people. We're getting better armor, which means soldiers are surviving better than they ever have in the past. But the downside of survival in a lot of these blasts is that the one thing that we can't stop is brain injuries. And when you get in a blast and your brain gets shaken all over inside of your head and bounces off the inside of your skull in all directions, you get these little micro tears that occur. And these micro tears are the things that people talk about changing people's personality. Now, there's plenty of families I've talked to that said they had this glow in their eye when they left, and there's a blank in there now that they just don't understand where the person that they loved has gone to. And maybe they're just not totally there anymore because their personality has changed due to some of this kind of traumatic brain injury that can be occurring. for exposure therapy to work occurs very quickly, actually. In fact, once we start doing the exposures for people, we can start to see changes happening right away. We start with very low-level issues and fears first, and we work our way up. We don't start in the deep end of the pool and tell you to swim. We start at the baby pool and put a toe in. So we want people to slowly and gradually learn that they can handle what it is that they fear. We never talk about curing anybody because I can't stop a memory from happening, but what I can have happen is that if that memory does pop back into your head, that you don't have to have a whole flashback reaction to it. You could just acknowledge it as there it is and move on. So some people who've been in a horrible car accident might never want to drive again, and other people could be driving again and could acknowledge, you know what, I could be in another accident today. It could happen, but I'm willing to accept that risk. We're asking these people to go over and to fight for our country and to defend us and to help to establish what we hope are our liberties in various places. And so if we're asking people to go into harm's way, I think it's important that after they've done that sacrifice for us, if they've given the ultimate sacrifice of their life, there's not much we can do other than honor them. But if they've given the sacrifice of part of their lives, then we ought to be doing something for them to make sure that we thank them for what it was that they did. And if we just let them be, I think it's a really, it's not a good reflection on a nation that doesn't take care of the people who have fought to keep the country safe. So I see this as just a duty that all of us have to the people who have fought for us. Their homelessness and drug and alcohol abuse and all sorts of things too. So not only is it the right thing to do, in the end it does help our bottom line in terms of you treat the people now and you have less costs later on in the future. There's not been much that people have said you don't understand. I mean, I run an anxiety disorder clinic. I don't have obsessive compulsive disorder, but I'm pretty good at treating it. So I just see it as another way of saying that I may not have what you have and I may not have done what you've done, but it doesn't mean that I don't know what to do to help you with it. If you have kind of that macho view of things, then you're supposed to walk it off. You know, you're supposed to just, it's supposed to just go away. You shouldn't need anybody else to help you. Everybody else, it's okay. You know, I call this specialness, the idea that the rules of the world apply to me differently than they do to everybody else. It's okay for other people to have to go through help and things like that, but it's not okay for me. I look at them as they have an overactive fight, flight, or freeze response that's getting set off in situations where it doesn't need to. My job is to help to sensitize you to the things that set it off so that it won't set it off anymore. So I see myself as kind of like, you can think of it like this. When you go into the military, they don't just talk to you about what you're going to go through. They do drills with you so that they can help to prepare you. And so for a lot of people, that works really well. But for some people, it just wasn't enough. And so for those that it wasn't enough, we need to do some other drills on the back end to help you overcome what you came through. We want to help as many people as we can. That's our goal. On average, you're looking at 18% of people coming back from the war as meeting criteria for post-traumatic stress disorder. And I'd estimate of that 18% who meet criteria, you're probably looking at maybe 25% of them who are seeking treatment. So far, you know, if people have insurance, we will use their insurance, but otherwise, no one's paid an out-of-pocket expense yet for anything. The employees of Alexian have covered all of the out-of-pocket expenses. We have employees who, on a yearly basis, can choose to give parts of their paycheck to whatever they want to, and a lot of our employees choose to fund our Veterans Initiative programming. A grant from the Illinois Department of Veterans Affairs that helped us to buy our virtual reality equipment that we have and has helped to pay for some people to go through the program. But whatever is left over, we have picked up then through our employee giving program. And we've not charged, even for our, every couple of months we do some programming for veterans and their families. No one's ever been charged for any of those. We provide food and all sorts of things. We provide therapists. We have a veterans center here on campus that we fund. So it's purely out of the generosity of the Alexian Brother community. I like exposure and response prevention because of how it does put people right back into that situation and teach them, guess what, you survived it. Yeah. You know, so many people, when they have a nightmare or flashback, are reliving that situation, and they think they're going to die because they barely made it through last time. This time it's going to kill them. What I want them to recognize is that, hey, you did make it through, and so therefore you're going to make it through again. This isn't going to come back and haunt you and kill you. You survived this. I have a goal, and I say this tongue in cheek, but I mean it seriously, that I never want to see a patient again for the rest of my life. You know, I want people to learn what they need to learn, and then I want them to go and live their life. I don't want them to have to rely on seeing me forever. I want them to really learn these skills to handle what it is they're afraid of and then move on. And hopefully they never have to call me again. I run the Center for Anxiety and Obsessive Compulsive Disorders at Alexian Brothers Behavioral Health Hospital. I've been here for 5 years. My training is all in anxiety disorders ever since I did my postdoc after graduating from Northern Illinois University with my PhD in clinical psychology. And that's all I treat is anxiety disorders. I don't do anything else. So. My friends all knew that they could talk to me about stuff if they had a problem, and then people would randomly call me who knew them, and then it got to the point where the phone would ring all the time at my house. The reason my parents got call waiting is because I was, like, doing therapy when I was 15 and 16 years old over the phone with people in the neighborhood, people I'd never met. I stopped 2 suicides when I was 16. That was kind of cool. Just people who called me and said they wanted to die, and I talked them out of it. And so I thought, well, maybe I'm pretty good at this, and that's when I decided to kind of make it a career. And so I went to Illinois Wesleyan and did my 4 years of college there, and then I went to Mississippi State University, got my master's degree. At Illinois Wesleyan, I did an internship for 3.5 years at the University of Illinois Medical School in Peoria. They have an anxiety disorder clinic, and that was really my first intro into anxiety disorders. And then I didn't touch it again, really, until after I'd graduated. I actually thought I was going to work at college counseling centers and just work with college kids for the rest of my life. But I did apply for a few postdoctoral fellowships, and I ended up getting one at the St. Louis Behavioral Medicine Institute, which is part of the St. Louis University Medical School. And I worked in their anxiety disorder clinic, and I knew within about 3 days that this was going to be the rest of my life, that this is what I was going to do. And I've done nothing else, nor do I have really any desire to do anything else for my career. I enjoy it. That's the best part of it. You know, there's nothing better than taking somebody who's afraid of something and then watching them do it and the smile on their face when they realize that they now know how to handle something. We've interviewed a few women to look into it, but they've not kind of followed through as well as the guys have. But I also know that the women have been more open to seeking other help from other people as well, too. So versus when the guys come in, we're usually their first stop other than the VA. And even if they go to the VA, they're not always very open about things at the VA. So there's a lot of people out there who want to just do a lot of nice, good work and everything. And there's a lot of people who are doing that. But you have to take a look at there's a difference between something that's a therapy versus something that's treatment. And I consider what I do really being treatment. You know, my goal is that by the time they're done, that they can go out and live in society and be triggered and not respond with a nightmare or a flashback or something like that. Versus a lot of the stuff with the therapies are all about, while you're with us, we're going to have you be calm. But when you leave us, a lot of the stuff unfortunately comes back. And again, that's why a lot of people don't like the kind of treatment that I do, because I purposely try to create anxiety in people with the goal of teaching them how to handle it. Whereas a lot of other therapists have an idea, and I've even read this in some therapist's office, you know, they'll have a sign up that say, therapy should be a pleasant experience, you should leave here feeling warm and fuzzy, and all that kind of stuff. And you don't leave that way feeling when you've worked with me. You feel like you've run a marathon, and you're worn out, and that's exactly how you ought to be leaving, because you did some work, and you learned how to handle some things today. So